Falling Dominoes, and Greg has
started
the intro, so I'm going to.
Hey, go ahead. Greg. I thought we.
No, I'm
with
just
Greg
kidding.
McGill and Billy Russell.
Yeah. Kind of breaking up there, Greg, a little bit.
Okay, I don't know if you can hear me now. How about that? I'm trying to get my wires.
All right.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and go then.
Yeah, go ahead, because I'm trying to get the audio.
This is William Rapillum, and I'm with Greg McGill, and also with our producer, Richard Carey. And tonight we have a show. We're going to have a show like we always do. But we're going to have
a show.
Tonight. And that special guest is none other than Michael King, also known as M.S. King. He is going to be joining us here in the first hour. He should be calling in in the next few minutes or so. And
that is super cool. What a great guest he is.
Great books.
Right.
I've read all.
He's an author. He's a historian, journalist, researcher. Right. He's got websites that he runs.
Marketing. Yeah, he'll give us the story. I don't want to.
Yeah.
I don't want to.
Yeah, right.
Stage
exactly.
Him. But he's coming on, and he's been instrumental in so much learning.
Red pilling.
Red pilling. Brilliant writer. Greg, sorry, you're still kind of breaking up there, Greg.
Fine.
What?
Hey, Richard, can you hear me? Are you getting my audio?
You sound good now. Maybe you were just fumbling around
getting
situated.
Okay, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if it's my
Yeah, you're sounding good now.
All right, well, yeah. Anyway, that's good. He'll be a great guest to have. And I have a... announcement for
someone just
May,
joined you now,
June.
Gentlemen.
Oh, cool. Hello.
Mike King here.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for calling in to Fallen Dominoes. Thank you so much. That's really great to have you. It's an honor, actually.
My pleasure. I was just turning in online. I could have sworn you guys were talking about me.
We were. Your ears were burning. Yeah, that's great.
Right on. Mike, nice to have people talk behind my back and say good things for a change.
Yes, right. And you've written a lot of books, and you've touched a lot of nerves, and you're definitely doing a great favor to revisionism. There's no question about that.
Yeah, been at this a while now, and you were talking about the red pill earlier, and that's really what I set out to do with this stuff, but not just to present this information, but to do it in a way that's clear, concise, and simple enough that anybody can dive right into it and get up to speed pretty quick.
Yeah. Yeah, that's go ahead, Greg.
Oh, I was just going to say that revisionism is it's crazy that's what they do. They give a revised version of history. We are actually just finding the truth about history, real history.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's what you do, Mike, right at your site.
Yeah. Yeah,
Real History Channel.org,
formerly TomatoBubble.com, but now
right, that's
Real
the Tomato Bubble.
.org, yeah. And that's what it is. You know, I always say fake history is fake news that has passed into the rearview mirror. And that's what it is. I mean, the media was just the major media was just as phony back then, and then as time passes, the fake news becomes fake history.
Yeah. Never heard it that way before.
How do you deal with the? I mean, basically, when you bring up some of these issues, like you do with Hitler and things like that, you get people foaming at the mouth instantly, and just it brings up something in there. I mean, yeah, they start hissing at you right away. And how do you deal with that, Mike? Because you get a lot of flack, you know, for what you're telling people that, you know,
the narrative we've
been given about history is a lie.
That's true. I mean, there's a lot of people who will join my free mailing list at the website and start reading my articles or following me. And then as they get into it, they see some of the Hitler stuff. And they'll send an email, take me off your list. And these are people who are supposedly red pilled. So even people on our side, people who have a pretty deep understanding of things, still when they go to that layer of the rabbit hole, it's tough. It's a
have
tough.
Have you heard
side.
Of
it's
the
very,
Godwin?
Very, who's that?
Go ahead. I was going to ask you if you've heard of the Godwin principle. It's said that it's an actual probability of probability theorem that all arguments on the internet, if an argument goes long enough, they all go eventually lead to Hitler comparisons.
Oh yeah, I have heard that. I didn't remember.
It's a real thing.
It was cold, but
Godwin, you know.
And it's funny sometimes the so-called right and the so-called left will accuse each other of being Hitler. You know.
Yeah, right.
Try to out
Hitler. They never.
Yeah, but really, from our side, that should not happen. I'm talking about people who understand that there's globalists and that there's a new world order and that there's fake news. You know, those kind of people who have a high level of understanding, they really shouldn't fall for that anymore. Because at some point, you have to just do a little logical deduction and ask yourself if they're doing it now, if they're selling all these lies to us now, what makes you think it wasn't going on back then? You know?
The Lugan press.
Yeah.
Even worse
so,
back
yeah,
then.
Yeah, but I write about, I write
had,
about
yeah,
a lot of different
monopoly
topics.
Over all of the media, all five channels of it, the three major news networks, of TV networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, and then the Washington Post and the New York Times. Were the five prongs that they had into the mind of the entire world, really. Now they have the internet. And
Hitler called them the Lugan press, the lying press.
Yeah, that was
called
them.
The Lugan press. And Trump calls them fake news.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And it was the same owner.
You can read Mein Kampf, and it's just the same thing going on today. You know, he rails against the press and how they control the people, and people worship the Jewish newspapers. But it's amazing. Nothing's changed. So he was, that's why he's so vilified.
Yeah, we've gotten into that. A lot of the reasons why, to hide the economic system, and mainly and how Germany actually under Hitler was more of a utopia than anything else. Everybody loved it. You know, it wasn't an evil dictatorship or anything.
No, not at all. It's interesting. He was elected, and the people who voted against him, the left-wing people, the communist voters, the Democratic Socialist Party voters who voted against him, within a year, they were his strongest supporters. So, I mean, that tells you a lot. I mean, it would be like, yeah. Can you imagine now if Trump had 95% approval of the American people?
Oh, God.
Imagine yeah. if he had won over all of the
libtard
voters. I'm talking about the voters, of course, not the hardcore communists and libtards. Talk about, you know, relatively
people on the fence.
Decent people who vote Democrat because they don't know any better. Imagine if Trump had 90% of Democrat support today. That's what Hitler achieved.
Who's done that today? Has anybody done it since then? Anyone, anywhere, have that kind
that's
of
degree, that degree of popularity? No.
Yeah.
Not that level of popularity, no.
All right.
And, you know, nobody can say, oh, that's because he brainwashed everybody. But that's
right, that's what I was going to say, yes. You can't brainwash the whole country.
No, that's no. Right. And, you know,
brainwashed everybody with good propaganda.
Half of the country was was against him when he came to power.
Right, when he started.
So what does that tell you?
He literally won them over.
He won people over. So it's just an amazing story.
Really
is. Part of that was policy usury, right?
What was that?
Part of that was a huge part of that, probably the crux of that, was abolishing usury.
Oh, yeah. The economic system, they printed their own money. And, you know, they had these massive war reparation debts that had been imposed on them after World War One, and he just simply said, screw you, I'm not paying. And
we're not paying
them. We're not paying.
Right. What do you think? You know?
Well, they shouldn't pay because the war wasn't their fault. It was based on false pretenses, and it was a planned annihilation of the German people.
Yeah.
That they kept going on with.
Right. They should have been paying Germany.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, well, we definitely fought the wrong enemy, and you're helping to open a lot of people's eyes to that, you know, because of your start. I think you're starting to get pretty prolific as an author. Did Amazon take your stuff down, like the Bad War? Can you get the Bad War on Amazon anymore?
No. They took. Damn. I had a total of 23 books that I had published over 5-year period, last 5-6 years. But my best sellers were The Bad War. That was number one. And then Planet Rothschild, volumes 1 and 2. And then The British Mad Dog on Winston Churchill.
Oh, really?
So those were my four bestsellers.
What about the Putin one?
Yeah.
Well, that's still on Amazon. See, well, what they did is, I mean, I guess you could say all my books are controversial, but the ones that they banned were the ones that delved too deeply into World War II. You can't get into that subject. And that was my bread and butter. The books are still available. Right. I sell them directly through my website, realhistorychannel.org.
Is that the Subscribestar?
Subscribe yeah.
Okay. What's the first one you said? The .org? What is it?
Oh, realhistorychannel.org.
Realhistorychannel.org. You can get all of Mike King's books on there. And then you also have Subscribestar, right?
That's for people who want to help me out with donations, and that entitles people to get, they can get all the books too in PDF format through Subscribestar. You'll see all the donation information at the website. I also give out a free report called How to Respond to an Anti-Conspiracy Theorist, and that gets
that's
you on
a great
feet.
Thing. I have a question about that. Is there any one rebuttal that, like, a go-to for you to shut up a Nazi paranoid sheep or whatever? Is there anything that you have that you go to? Is there one big one?
Well, I've got like 16 in that report, but they're all pretty powerful. But I like to say to people, listen, do you believe the old adage that power corrupts absolutely? Have you ever heard that?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Do you believe money corrupts? Yeah. Then why don't you believe people with tons of money and tons of power wouldn't be corrupt? Well, what is corruption?
Logic.
Corruption is crime. And is crime done? Yeah. Is crime done in the open? Is crime announced to the people? No. It's by definition, all corruption is conspiratorial. So you can't. How can you say power corrupts? and then in the next breath say, oh, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. So that usually
this is where your marketing acumen comes in.
Believe in conspiracy theories, just official ones.
How many times do we repeat power corrupts, absolutely, and the other one is money is the root of all evil. Did you ever hear that one? Well, yeah, of course.
For the love of money, For the love of money is the root of all evil.
Okay, so
absolutely.
People who are swimming in money, drunk in power, by definition, they're prone to evil and corruptness then.
Right.
So
the kids are a lot more prone than regular.
So yeah, that one is a powerful one.
Sure.
I also like to use precedent of things like, did you ever hear of the Manhattan Project? Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, okay. Do you know how many people were involved that kept the A-bomb secret? 100,000 people. They had secret cities. You know, obviously 100,000 people didn't know what was going on. It's compartmentalized. Another big one is people say, oh, how can you get so many people? Well, that explains it. But more importantly, you don't need the 100,000 people all getting the same marching orders. You just need the head of the organization, you see?
And that will follow.
Exactly, because there's two things that unite people. Doesn't matter how different the people are. And that one is fear, and the other one is self-interest. Mm. So if you control the top and you create that atmosphere of fear and self-interest, well, people will fall into line. They're not going to speak.
That's
out.
The media's doing right this second, right? That's what the media pounds in the people. Right now. I mean, that's for.
But I put together a whole free report of such arguments, and people find it very, very useful. So it's like,
where can we get that report again, Mike? Where can we get it?
Go to the website, realhistorychannel.org.
Realhistorychannel.org.
.com, right.
Right, org. I'm writing it down right now. I'm going to go on there.
You'll see a sign-up box. Yes.
Realhistory.org. And if anybody wants to call in right now to Fallen Dominoes and talk with author M.S. King, the phone number is 855-492-6049. We'd love to have you join in, jump in on the conversation. This guy is a treasure chest of knowledge, and he's written a ton of books, and this is just amazing that you're on the show. I can't tell you how honored we are.
Yeah.
My pleasure. How'd you guys hear about me?
Ever since I got into revisionism, I know who you are. I mean, I've been kind of following you for a while and on Tomato Bubble and stuff. Probably about the past 5 years I've been following you.
Okay.
Five years?
Tomato Bubble is still up there as an archive, but it's not been updated in 4 months. There's nothing new being added.
Yeah. Maybe
and
a little
time,
less than that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Facebook banned it, right? So you just jumped onto the real history. Focus on that one, right?
Yeah, Tomato Bubble the site is still up, but it's inactive. There's nothing new being added.
Right.
So if you want to see all the other stuff that I put on there since January 1st of this year, you go to realhistorychannel.org.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let me jump in and tell you how I came to get to know you and your work, Mike. And it is an absolute honor to get a chance to finally speak with you. And to do an interview. For me, it was 2018, I think around May or so. And I had already watched The Greatest Story Never Told. I was just, the red pilling had started happening at the end of 2017 to me. I until October of 2017, I believed the 6 million and I believed.
Oh, yeah. We all believed that at one time.
Yeah, I mean, but as early as not even 3 years ago, so like two and a half years ago.
You made a lot of. I've been only in this for about 7 years.
And an Ashkenazi Jewish guy, kind of, you know, on Facebook, sort of red-pilled me through a forum, you know, just like, you know, it's happening all over the place. Yeah. So I didn't, you know, believe it at first, but I decided to keep an open mind and look into it, and I asked another friend what that was all about. And all he could tell me was, dude, it's the Jews. And I'm like, what does that even mean? Yeah. I go, I don't understand. I never really had any problem with Jewish people or anything. They've never given me any issue. So it was like, well, okay, but here, watch this video by David Duke. I'm like, David Duke, what? So he talked about the media and how they controlled the entire media and how they controlled the government through, you know, the banks and everything, like Goldman Sachs and all that. And I was like, oh, my God. So about 6 months later, I came upon, so just to make this short, 6 months later or so, I came upon a podcast between you, Mike, and I think it was either Tex Mars or Veritas Radio or somebody like that, or David
Duke. I've done both of those shows, and I also did one with David Duke, which blew me away because he helped.
Yeah, I listened to that again the other day.
I said it blew me away when David Duke reached out to me because he was the one. He was one of the writers who helped to red pill me about 25 years ago.
Wow!
So. Yeah. So that was an honor for me, and yeah, we had a great conversation about the bad.
I'd love to meet him.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, I did.
Pardon me, gentlemen.
Started writing books 5 years ago, you said.
My first published book was actually I published the bad war in like
2015,
2013.
13.
Oh wow.
Okay. And that was like done. That was like self-published through a local printer. Then I started getting on the Amazon self-publishing service, and I did the war against Putin in 2014, and then I made the bad war on Amazon, and then Keep Planet Rock.
That was like 2015. Yeah, see, I remember that, seeing that on there.
Pardon me, gentlemen.
On the Amazon. Yes,
Gregory, you have a caller on the line. You have a Tony.
Oh, cool.
Tony in Virginia.
Hey, Tony, welcome to the show, Falling Dominoes. You're on with M.S. King, author and historian.
Yeah, hello, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. You invited callers, so I called in.
Absolutely.
I understand this is a new show, so I thought I'd check that out. Initially, I called about when you talked about the Rosenbergs, not the Rosenbergs, I'm sorry, which led to that because they told us, I'm sorry, the Manhattan Project. And I did some research into that, and I actually question the capability of nuclear weapons. I think it's been exaggerated.
That's a good point.
And I don't know if you ever looked at that. We brought that up, but I don't want to. I do not want to direct this off course. I'm just telling you why I called. I had no idea that you actually had a revisionist guest on. That's awesome. I studied a lot into that. I've listened all the men and gentlemen that you mentioned, Duke, Tex Mars, all this stuff. And I would just say, okay, as I'm listening, I'm thinking to myself, I follow all this, but if someone's like a new listener, they may not. And like kind of like you were saying, ju. And so I find that when dealing with people that initially it's good to just compartmentalize something that's heavy with Jews, right? And then and just stick with that subject, because when you come at them with a bunch of subjects, ju, like this, and say it's the first time listening.
I agree, it's very sensitive.
You
have to approach it carefully. It's a great point, Tony.
Where it turns them off from wanting to search and dig, at first you might get their curiosity, but then they start thinking, well, this guy just has it in for
Jews. He's just an anti-Semite or a Nazi or something.
When you research so many things, it's amazing how many Bergs, Steins, Witzes, I mean, you're going to find.
Well, it's really hard.
It's a hard topic to approach, and we all have to, it's difficult. And we're all wise to it. We're all Jew-wise here, but how do you deal with it, you know, with the public?
Well, you know, you got to know the audience you're dealing with. I mean, as for me and my, you know, my work, it's, you know, I don't really hold much back, okay. At the same time, I understand too what your caller's saying. But that's the good thing. There's a whole lot of different approaches out there. Like, let's say you take a site. Like InfoWars, for example. Okay, now they will never touch the Jew, never. But if you spend enough time there and researching
globalist.
And learning about globalism, New World Order, this and that, you get to a point where you're ready to make that next step. So there's a whole lot.
So they can be kind of a gateway. You know, they're all kind of gatekeepers, also at the same time. They're not just.
Well, I mean, but here's the thing about gatekeepers too, is because they have to put out a lot of truth in order to create an illusion of total legitimacy. There's still a lot of people who will be able to latch on to the truth part and then go to the next level. So, you know, even in cases like that, you know, they could be useful. But as for me, you know, I made the decision that I was just going to stick to the absolute red pill. And, you know, I mean, sometimes people will say, you know, if you toned it down a lot, that I can share it with, like, people. And I'm like, I totally understand what you're saying.
You are toning it down. I mean, really, you are. As much, I mean, good Lord. How do you even, yeah, wow.
Well, it all depends on your audience.
Yeah.
It all depends on your audience.
And you know, there's different, and it, everybody's different in how they respond. Some people respond well to shock treatment. Some people, they need their hand held, you know. So I just say, you know, to each his own, however they want to, like, work at pursuing the truth, I guess there's no one right answer, you know.
It's important to share it, though.
Oh, yeah.
I can remember one shock treatment that I got once. It was that same person, just a few months later, the same person that had originally red-pilled me in the end of 2017 on the forum that he was in. He proposed a post of a picture of Richard Spencer, and it's like a Bitcoin post, and he titles it, "Buy Bitcoin Because Hitler Was Right About the Jews." And I'm laughing my ass off at this, because who says that? And I'm like, dude, that is fucking base. Sorry about my French, but that was, you know.
You end up,
like,
once you start researching, it's almost impossible not to end up as a giant fan of Hitler. Actually, once you started, I never would have thought that was what was going to happen.
No, he's. I mean, he's like a demigod in my book. You know, he's just an amazing human being. The great writer and poet Ezra Pound called him a saint, and he really was. The way he lived his life, just the way he lived his life, he was just total honesty, honor, total dedication to his people.
Right.
A straight shooter, courageous. A very soft-hearted man. You know, he knew how to be a badass with the bad guys. You know, but he's a guy who's a vegetarian. He couldn't bring himself to eat animals. You know. The women loved him. The children loved him. He was, definitely.
Mike,
someone...
What do you think of Trump? I hate to really take it off of Hitler. I hate to take it off of Hitler, but I think you support him, right? I know we can't love this.
I do, and the reason why is as imperfect of a man he is, he right now, he's the tip of the spear fighting the globalists. He's fighting the same enemies.
Bingo.
That Hitler,
as Hitler was. Yeah,
exactly.
I totally agree.
And
that's awesome.
You know, the only difference is, and this is kind of an inversion, was Hitler created a movement and then led it. Trump was chosen by another force, which is military intelligence. He created. So that's the difference.
They picked him.
But what Hitler did is incredible, because, you know, he came from nothing, and he built the party up by himself.
What do you say to people who say that he was a Rothschild agent, like that Chris Berger? I can't say his last name. I forget.
I call
that
him
guy
Chris Bajerkoff. That's what I call him.
There you go. That's more accurate. Yeah,
I actually did. I did a rebuttal piece on him and Mike, who I refer to as Mike Jerkoffman.
Which guy's that, Mike? Well, I hate to give him any.
Hoffman.
Right. Oh, Mike Hoffman.
Here's the guy. He's done excellent work debunking the hoax. Hoffman.
Oh, that's good.
But he's another one who's on this anti-Hitler thing. But it's total nonsense. He arrested the leading Rothschild in Germany.
There you go.
And it was like big time British people had to like beg for him to release. And they finally released him, but they took his assets. You know?
That's awesome. Yeah.
When did that happen? was, because I don't have a lot of information on that. It seems like it's hard to get or something.
Yeah, when did that?
That's a good
question,
actually,
Willie.
Before the war in 1935, they had Baron Louis Rothschild.
Baron Louis, okay.
Austrian Rothschild.
Yeah.
They had him arrested, and they seized all his assets.
Right.
You know, they repudiated all the debts that they owed to the big Jewish bankers. I mean, it's just ludicrous to call him a bullshit.
That he would be working for them. Exactly.
Yeah, totally,
yeah. And then they want to say,
let me tell you,
Argentina.
You know what these guys are? I'm going to tell you what these guys are all about. They can't with right-wing people, we're not going to be able to discredit Hitler by using the same old arguments that they use liberals, that he was, he started the war, this and that. No, what they have to say is, he was really a secret Bolshevik. So it's like,
it's retarded. It doesn't make any sense, let alone there's no proof of it.
No, there's no proof of it. And in fact, in my rebuttal piece, the pieces that I wrote rebutting these arguments, they cite some British writer from the 1940s, okay, as a source, and this guy got it from the Strasser brothers, okay, who were rivals.
Not like any parentheses.
But these guys, they tried to overthrow Hitler. They tried to stage a coup in 1934. So these are like enemies of Hitler within the party.
Yeah.
Who they wanted the power for themselves. So that's who they use as a source. And the way that they tried to take the power from them is they were trying to say, because they were all members of the National Socialist German Workers' Party. And they were trying to take power. They would try to discredit Hitler by saying, you know, he's not one of us. He's really a Bolshevik. So that's where it comes from.
Gotcha.
You know?
That totally makes sense. Sure. They always do try to take on the, you know, like, it's just another way of a false flag.
Yeah. So, and it turned out that the Strassers, one of the Strassers after the war was like openly pro-Stalin, you know? So.
People don't put that together.
I always say, I got to go to the original source. If somebody makes a claim, say, okay, where did you get that from? Well, I got it from this guy. Okay, where did he get it from? And then you go back, you peel back the onion, and that's what
I found. That's where you found it.
The Strasser brothers, and the Strasser brothers were absolute scum. They were Marxists.
They were sworn enemies
of Hitler because... Yeah. They wanted the power. Anytime you have an organization, there's always going to be a faction. The one faction wants the power over the other. And they were the ones back in the 20s who were starting these slanders against Hitler. Bajerkins is a big fan. He cites the Strassers.
Oh, I'm sure.
So,
That's his bread and butter, I bet. These lying bastards back then, that's who he's going to... and then they also want that he ran to Argentina after the war. And I mean, that's just stupid on so many levels.
Yeah.
You can't even.
Hitler's enemies can see that he was very brave and courageous in battle.
Right.
So
48 battles
that he's
in
gonna,
World War I.
And there's so many. There were witnesses there in the bunker. Some of them died only like 15 years ago. A secretary, a bodyguard. So you know he's gonna write this fake story, this fake testament about I'm gonna die. I'm gonna go down with my people here in Berlin, right? And he's gonna tell this to all of his inner circle, and then he's gonna slip out the back door and go to Argentina. That's not him. That is not Hitler.
They want to. The coward that sold his people out and then ran. He survived 48 battles in World War I, including a mustard gas attack. The guy wasn't afraid of death.
Yeah, yeah. He actually hurt his leg very badly. He could have stayed home after his leg injury, but he healed up and he went back out again.
The
man was absolutely fearless and dauntless, and he was just all about the honor. And can you imagine? So he writes in his last testament that I'm setting an example and I expect, you know, generals to fight to the end, this and that. And seeing how
weren't his generals, a lot of them were screwing him over at the end there. I mean, weren't a lot of his generals giving him bad information?
You know, because some of these generals, they came from the old Prussian elite circles and the old nobility. Number one, they always resented him because he just came up from the people. So he wasn't part of that class.
Yeah, he was a worker. He was a worker.
He was homeless when he was a young man in his early 20s. He was homeless, and both of his parents had died. And he supported himself with his artwork, which was amazing. Really talented.
No, it's great artwork. Oh,
it
yeah.
It is.
It is.
So,
it is. It's very good stuff.
So, you
in fact,
he had
Mike,
a lot of these generals.
I bought from you a couple
that, Mike?
Months ago. I just laid them down here so that I could, because they've been enrolled up in the thing you sent them in. So I just laid them down here.
You got to hang them. You got to get yourself from frames and hang them. They're beautiful.
But I just, when I came up here to do this phone call, I turned the light on, and there they were. They're resting under the pillows, flattened out.
Yeah, put them in frames, man. I've got some NSDAP stuff. I've got propaganda photos. I mean, posters, and I've got the classic one of them. I kind of have a little NSDAP collection. I've got pins, knives. I've got a banner from the 1930s that's authentic. I've got a armband that's real. What else?
Nice.
I guess stamps, coins, labor treasury note. I have a 5-mark labor treasury note.
Yeah.
I love that. That's cool stuff. It's a piece that's really to have with the
labor treasury note. One of the things I did want to talk about was how much of the wars, or how much of the, you know, war financing was through the labor treasury note, and how much of it was from...
That's another argument against him, that the Rothschilds financed him.
Right.
Yeah, that's nonsense.
Right, Mike?
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
His financing, his main source of financing was people who joined the party or people who loved what they were hearing, and small donors.
Right.
It's a lot like Trump. Trump raises a ton of money from small donors. Every day people send them $20, $30,
yeah.
You know. So
yeah.
He had masses of German people
movement.
Sending small donations. There were wealthy German entrepreneurial class, because they were afraid of communism. Okay.
Right.
There were wealthy emigres from Russia who escaped the Bolshevik Revolution, and they were in Germany. So that was a source of funding.
That was a big one.
So he had tons of funding, but you know, these clowns, they'll manage to track down some small loan or donation from some obscure Jew and say, "Aha, there it is." You know?
Then all of a sudden, he's financed by the Rothschilds. I imagine there were even some Jews that liked the guy. Really?
Oh, there actually were.
Yeah.
And that's actually
Jewish soldiers
there were a lot of Jewish businessmen, you know, and they wanted to see
they were doing good
recovery. And then, you know, even you might have even had the occasional Jew who's thinking, well, let me get myself on all sides here, let me get some money to this party too.
They're known to play the side.
I have a question.
So,
what's that? Is this Tony
related to this specifically? Yes, sir.
Tony, what you got, buddy?
Obviously, you men are more learned on this than I am. Is that he took money to transport, and this is interesting, to to exile the Jews, right? And the Zionists, I believe, led by a man named Herzl at the time, and this is which that movement started, I believe, right before the turn of the 20th century. They, you know, obviously they wanted to take the land back. You guys, I'm sure, familiar with the Balfour Accord and all that. I don't know what the listeners are. But, and that the funding was to exile them, and he took Rothschild money. The name Warburg has come up, but I'm not sure. I don't want to speak to that. Maybe you can give some clarity to that. But to me, I don't see what's the problem. I mean, number one, if they have the same goal, that he wanted Jews out of Germany, and that's because they weren't working towards German interests. It was towards their...
Right,
it was an expulsion.
That's another thing that will twist around.
And now think about this. If the Rothschilds are facilitating this with their great wealth, which everybody knows they were at the time, And this guy, at the same time, you're saying that he's exterminating them, but they're able to secure with Rothschild money their security and their exile. Why wouldn't that continue? So why, you see the problem there? Like, why wouldn't the Rothschilds buy all that they could versus these ones that are getting gassed, which, anyway, I don't know. And you may want to touch on that.
No, nobody was gassed in World War II, Tony.
Right,
yeah, nobody was.
Yeah, but that's a shock to most people. And you got to realize that's like
I agree. It is. They can't believe it.
Yeah.
That didn't happen.
So, you know, like a first-time listener. Anyway, continue, gentlemen.
So, yeah, but that was another deal they made, because early on, when Hitler first came to power, the Jews organized big international boycotts of Germany, which were, Hitler wanted to get rid of. At one point, the Zionists, being the opportunists that they are, they said, hey, listen, we can maybe help you get rid of these sanctions, these boycotts. So that's the context. That's the context for Germany facilitating the transfer of some of the German Jews out of Germany to Palestine, which was controlled by the British at the time.
Right.
And they did lift that. They were able to use their influence to lift the boycotts. And, you know, there was a big division among Jews, because the more communist-minded Jewish elite were like, no deals with Germany. But the more Zionist ones, you know, their main thing is to set up Israel. They care more about that
right.
than they care about globalism.
Yeah.
So you had these factions within Jewry. So they made a deal.
Fact.
It was beneficial to Germany in two ways, because number one, the boycott ended. And number two,
right.
they didn't really want these Jews there anyway. So,
yeah.
so to take
yeah.
something
well,
like
then,
that,
yeah.
like Bajerkov does, and he will
right.
twist it
Bajerkov.
To, oh, he was a Zionist.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's a good disinformation agent. I can't believe the guy's getting as much traction as he is with that nonsense, but he's, you know, it seems
you
to
know,
be...
he played it very smart these last few years, which is why I suspect he's a disinfo agent. He wrote several books debunking Einstein, exposing Einstein as a fraud,
wow.
as a plagiarist.
Well, isn't he onto something there?
Well, he is, but you know what? When he did that, he got a lot of credibility within our circles. You see?
Oh, then he came in with
his
dinger.
He drops
the
bomb, and it's like,
really?
Wow. Oh, this, yeah. So, yeah, but that's his
he's a clever
thing. Yeah,
clever. Is he Jewish?
You know what? He's part. He actually had like a single grandparent or something. So he. So,
well,
you know, this might have been his shtick all along, you know? Let me trash Einstein.
That's like,
okay.
This is like
all the right-wing people will love me, because Einstein
yeah.
was a commie.
Right.
And so he builds up that street cred, turns around, and
right.
he goes
with the truth. Yeah. Yeah, and comes in with that. That's very clever. I mean, he got some, you know, people that don't have necessarily good discernment skills. They're going to go
yeah.
with that whole Hitler was a Rothschild Zionist, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
It's hard to fight that stuff. I mean, people, they want their ears tickled with lies. I don't think, you know, when you start telling them the truth about Hitler, it seems like it's so absurd
yeah.
to them
yeah.
that they can't even process it.
I have a similar
yeah.
question
yeah.
For Mr. King on the topic of people trying to discredit...
Richard.
Yes, this is Richard Carey, the station manager. Hi, Mr. King.
Hi, how are you, Richard?
Good. Thank you for being here. I was curious.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people seem to try to discredit Hitler's being loyal to his people, mentioning that he was a Rothschild agent or taking this money. I also hear a lot of people talk about connections to George Prescott Bush. I was wondering if you could lay any insight
yeah.
onto how those rumors came about.
Well, there is that famous
okay.
picture with Lloyd George that somebody photoshopped and put Prescott Bush over it. I've seen that going around.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's the deal with
yeah,
that.
You
now,
with
you,
that?
In addition to the bajerkness types who were out to trash it, you've got other people who... they need to like kind of work their way around being anti-establishment, and then trying to explain why we should be against Hitler when he was against the same establishment. So that, yeah, that's another motive that people have, to link Hitler with like people like Prescott Bush and things like that, or IBM. But here's the deal. We did business. American companies did business with Germany when they had a Kaiser and a monarchy. And then after World War One, they became a so-called democratic republic, and we did business with the German Democratic Republic. And then Hitler got elected, and we continued to do business. So what is the big deal?
Why wouldn't they, though?
Yeah, right.
Why wouldn't anybody have done that?
It's not like it's 33, 34, 35. We're not at war. Everybody thinks we're right. Anything. Even the initial propaganda wave had passed, and it seemed like we're kind of being friendly with Germany. So to go back and say, well, this company did business with Germany and this company did. Yeah, well, why not? Why? I don't understand. Just because the leader of the country changed, for what reason would we have had in 33, 34, 35, 36, 37 not to be doing business with Germany? So it's a very bizarre argument.
I'm
no fan of Prescott Bush. But, if he's involved with an investment.
But, I mean, if he did, why wouldn't they have done that? Like you say, IBM and big companies like that, probably saw the way their economy was taking off like a rocket. They wanted a piece of it. Why wouldn't they?
Yeah, exactly. The German airships were arriving here all the way up until 1937. They were flying over New York City and New Jersey, the Hindenburg and all that.
Right.
It's just another silly argument, and it's just kind of like bitterness. It's like the Jews carrying out their vendetta because they wanted the boycott in 33, 34, 35. But there are so many businesses who are like, boycott for what? You know, what's the problem? You know,
they probably didn't get a good response.
Mike, I have a theory I want to run by you real quick. And this is, I don't know hardly anything about Prescott Bush, except he was, Bush's grandfather, Bush Senior's father, right? We all know Bush Senior was in the CIA. He probably had something to do with Kennedy being killed.
Yeah.
And then, we all know who Bush Junior was in helping orchestrate 9/11. So when I heard that Prescott Bush supposedly, either did business with NSDAP Germany or financed Hitler in some way or another, and my thought was that after the Nuremberg trial, that they tell the Bush family, you're ours now. That the Zionists told the Bush family, you belong to us now, and you'll do what we want you to do, or you're dead. What happened after that was, George Bush Sr. in the CIA moves, but helping take out Kennedy, and then George Bush Jr. helping carry out 9/11 as tools.
Well, no. Israel took out Kennedy.
What do you think about that?
No,
I know, but they were tools.
Bush?
So they were, the Bushes were tools of Israel and the Zionists.
Yeah, the Bushes are more globalist than Zion. I mean, this is like a kind of a little subtlety, a little nuance of the global power structure as it works. The Zionists and the globalists are two factions of the same New World Order gang, but they're not always aligned. And they're not. Sometimes they're at cross purposes. Sometimes they're at war. Like, believe it or not, in Israel.
Really?
The hardcore Zionists, they hate George Soros, who's a Jew. They hate Soros. And so Zionism and globalism are not the same thing. Sometimes there's some overlap, but a lot of times there's opposition. So now why would – I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu, who's scum, don't get me wrong, he's scum. But he's a nationalist, okay? And his son posted stuff on Instagram that's like, it shows Soros as a puppet master, and it's stuff that they the New York Times called it anti-Semitic, which was weird because this is Netanyahu's son who was posting this. So what is that all about? Well, because the hardcore Zionists are ultra-nationalists. It's Israel first. It's we don't care about the UN or anything like that. It's they're ultra-nationalists. They're fanatical about it. It's not really a healthy nationalism. It's like a supremacist nationalism. But the globalists, hate nationalism. They want just one big government, and they take care of everything. And they look at someone like Netanyahu as like they can't control him. So they hate.
So they got a little power struggle.
Yeah, that's what it is. It's a power struggle.
I'd like to make it seems like six and one half a dozen and the other in terms of world government. I think the Zionists, they want to have the Sanhedrin at the head of and rule the world through that way and the Noahide laws and all that kind of thing.
There's an overlap.
Same thing that GoBus want to do, right?
Yeah, an overlap, like you said. They're trying to,
So there's a dialectic going on there.
Well, But that's Judaism for the goy.
I'm saying communism is Judaism for the goy. See, it's Zionism and nationalism for them, but it's globalism for the rest of the world. And that's basically that. I use that, too, to try to open people's eyes. It's like, why is it that Israel's the only nation on the earth that's not supposed to be multicultural? Like, they're supposed to have an ethnically Jewish state. And for, you know, the Christian Zionists, to which I used to be one and am not, that, you know, buy into this and that they're chosen, that they're the, you know, that they're the special people, you know, this is a real problem. And our people think that they're supposed to lose their identity.
It's a huge problem.
Yeah.
Ah, we agree.
Yeah, but that's why. So they, look at it this way, okay? Christians proselytize Christianity, okay? They believe they got a good thing, and they're trying to get you in on it. Muslims proselytize Islam. Even though they'll do it by violence and force, they do think it's a good thing, and you're actually welcome to it, okay? And the Eastern religions are the same. Judaism is a private party, and you're not invited. And it's really hard.
It's got to be by blood.
They scream. And,
yeah.
Yeah, they push white supremacy ideas.
You can't go live there. Yeah.
Right. You can't go live there, exactly. Yeah.
No, and they, then, don't, they don't like that either. That's why they don't allow them to marry non-Jews. But a Jew who's an atheist and blasphemes God is okay. So it's a religion when they want it, when it's practical for their...
When it's convenient.
Anyway, continue.
Yeah, that's right. I actually knew a case of a girl who was engaged to a Jewish guy, and she was going to convert, and he wanted to go back and live in Israel. And they created such a hard time, the Israeli government, the officials, they said, okay, well, if she converts, she can only work for the state, and like they had to control her. Like she had to agree with all this stuff. And she's like, no, I don't want them telling me what job I gotta do. And so he dumped her.
Right,
but
that mother was happy.
She's willing to convert and marry this guy, live in Israel.
They don't care about converts.
They want to put all these restrictions.
Yeah, second class citizens.
Yeah.
Just useful.
Well,
maybe
they use
like
them just like they use Trump's family.
They're still goyim. Mm.
Yeah. Well, hey, that whole thing with Trump's family, that's a brilliant move because he's got shields from being called anti-Semite and all that.
That really works out in his favor.
Deflections.
It does.
It
really does.
It's a marriage of political convenience.
It works out really good because they've never been able to hang that on him.
Right.
That's the kiss of death, you know?
It is.
So, I get pushback from readers. They don't understand. They're like, you know, he's always shouting and he's doing this and he said that. I said, listen, what he's doing is genius because he really hasn't given, he put the embassy in Jerusalem. Okay.
So what?
Big deal. Yeah. Big deal.
Yeah,
right. It's not a big deal. I mean,
who gives a
I say, what's more important? Where are you going to put your building or saving Assad in Syria. Assad would have been done if it wasn't for Trump.
Oh, yeah. Then, absolutely.
Yeah.
Syria would have been finished. It would have been Trump.
That's where it all stopped. That's where that's where he was able to stop them so far.
Yeah.
They've been stopped.
Yeah, he wiped out him and Putin. They wiped out ISIS. And who do you think ISIS is? ISIS is Mossad.
So you get the same idiot saying that Putin is a Jew controlled. You get the same people saying it about Trump that they say about
Bajurkov.
I just had one of those people on Facebook was really like.
What
does Bajurkov
do?
Bajurkov is he's anti-Putin. Bajurkov.
Of course he is. So, that totally makes sense.
You know. So, they'll dig up a picture of Putin at some freaking synagogue lighting the candle with some of these long-haired guys. It's like, aha! Well, you know what? I've been doing this.
You have to go through all that. It's a great way to not get called, you know. Like you say, it's a kiss of death, right, Mike? If they hang the anti-Semite label on you, your political career is done.
Yeah, because what they want to do when they do that is they want to unite all the Jews against somebody. Don't get that.
That'll never happen. They're not united on their own.
Now,
they are.
They can't. I mean, I think it's like 30% of Jews support Trump, which is huge.
Right. Wow. That's
awesome. They can't hang that anti-Semite card on you. So now some of these fools. I mean, what do you want Trump to do? Go out there and say, "Hey, I don't take orders from Jews." You know. All right. Great. Especially with
that's
30 million Christian Zionists. So, you got to be smart
that's where
the way you put, you handle this. So
he has to be a lot smarter than JFK.
Yeah. So, that's that. But there's no war with Iran, and there's not going to be a war with Iran.
Nope.
Syria has been saved, and the power now in the Middle East, the real power structure is Russia and Iran. And that's by design.
Wow.
So, but Trump is a genius because he's only saying nasty stuff about Iran. The dudes are excited about hearing that. But big deal.
Right.
Nothing's happening. There ain't going to be no war against Iran.
Right.
And
exactly.
Iran and Russia now are the power, and Israel can't do shit. So
that's what it looks like to me. And people can't see that because they think that Trump does whatever Israel says, and he works for Israel.
Look at his son-in-law.
I don't think he'd
want
to get in a war in the first term.
Yeah, his son-in-law. That's always their argument.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, now I agree with you that I'm not convinced about Assad being this bad guy that they say he is. I interact with a lot of people.
He's a heroic,
and his
he's
people
a
love
heroic
it. Christian, Muslim. Yeah.
But Tony,
Trump
Mike is saying that he's a heroic figure.
Yes,
he's beyond, not just is he an okay guy, he's a great man. That's what he's saying.
He is a great man.
I don't disagree.
He's like a mini
Hitler.
Really? That good?
You'll know.
I know is for everything they say about him, he had an insurgency, and he had outside rebels. So not only did we intervene with the Civil War. Why did we drop a bomb, though? I don't understand how you're crediting Trump on this.
Oh, nobody was hurt in that.
But he fed into
that
false flag narrative
bomb.
About the...
what's that, Mike?
The gas, the weapons of gas, gas thing?
No, here's what Trump does. Trump does this all the time. Whenever his adversaries start to build up pressure for something. Like, what are you going to do about Syria? Assad's killing his own people. So what does Trump do? He says all these nasty things. He says Assad is an animal and I'm going to take him out. And then he bombs a field. It's an empty field. And he even
empty
told
field.
The Russians ahead of time was coming. So he puts himself at the head of something and then he diverts it. He did this in North Korea. They're like, oh, you can't sit down with North Korea and make a deal. He's a dictator. So what does he do? He threatens North Korea. He says, "Rocket Man, I'm gonna destroy North Korea," and then he makes me. He did the art of the deal. In Parkland, Florida, they said, "What are you gonna do about gun control? All these high school kids killed." Trump says, yeah, we're going to take a look at gun control. Everyone's flipping out. Oh, Trump, he's selling out.
Yeah.
But he did
mess up with the bump stock thing.
The bump stock ban.
But said stuff about, yeah, the bumps. He did ban bump stocks. And I'm a little bit of a gun geek, and I have, you know, like, and that kind of bothers me. But I also do know that it's a novelty item. It's not, and he had to give him something. He gave him something. You know, that's part of his doing
now,
a concession.
Now on the vaccine, they're saying, oh, Trump, he's going to buy a vaccine.
Right.
But he's just saying that. And then he listened closely. He said, oh, if people don't want to take it, they don't have to take it. We're not going
to
do anything that's mandatory.
Absolutely.
So, but he does this over and over and over again. He's very strategic. And he says, okay, yeah, I'm going to do this, this, and that. And then the opposition crumbles, and then he does nothing, which is great.
Wow.
So,
yeah, and that's what's been going on every time. And then the people have been freaking out every time. And the worst one in this so-called truth movement, there are so many anti-Trump people that get a lot of the other things we're talking about. They get a lot of that other stuff.
Yeah.
But as soon as it comes to Trump, they nut up. You know, they can even know about Hitler. The Hitler was great and all that, and still.
But you know what? You know what though? If you think about it, that's actually kind of a good thing, because for a deception to really be effective, you got
to
sometimes fool your own people.
Good.
Yeah.
Good point.
And it kind of adds the.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. Because the left doesn't know how to handle them. They're too dumb. They haven't figured out yet. It's
clueless.
You know?
Hey, he hasn't held
up
freedom
of
speech, though.
I mean, you know how
all
many miles of,
and the fact
you know
that
many miles of wall have gone up in Mexico?
How much?
There's like hundreds of miles, several hundred miles of wall have been built. Nobody's
That's
talking
a lot
about
already.
It. He did it on the down low.
Wow.
I mean, serious, huge. There's like a video of it. Serious, huge chunks of wall. Powerful,
really.
But he did it. He slipped it. He slipped it into the military budget because Congress wouldn't give it to him, and he's doing it on the down low. Nobody's paying attention. But that wall is going up.
During all this other stuff. What are your thoughts on all this COVID-19? I mean, it's pretty.
I call it a flu d'état, because that's what
a flu d'état.
It was a worldwide effort to get their world government. It was launched by Bill Gates and the WHO.
Right.
The thing is essentially a flu. And it's real, but so is the flu. In terms of its deadliness, the numbers have been grossly exaggerated.
That's what we're all seeing.
Insane exaggeration.
Everson, what was his name, from Bakersfield? He owns the 7 clinics with the other doctor,
was that the two
he
doctors
came out
in that video?
The press conference.
There's a lot of doctors coming out. I mean, they're basically pressuring doctors. Every death now, you got to label it as COVID. So it's like, you know, flus and pneumonia. So, you know, that part of it is fake. But that's the idea, is to crash the economy, keep everything locked down, then you blame Trump for the bad economy. Ideally, they want to have an election by mail so they can do massive fraud.
Fraud,
okay?
Huge fraud.
Yeah.
That's what that's for.
Gates wants to vaccinate the whole freaking planet. Tracking technologies in the vaccine itself.
Little RFID in there.
Yeah. This is worldwide. And you know, I heard somebody say, well, how can you have 100 if you're all conspiring? And again, this goes back to understanding social dynamics of conspiracy theory. It's not 140 different entities. It's only one. Because every country in the world that is a member of the UN or is affiliated with the World Health Organization or the IMF or the World Bank, it means that they've got deep state in that country. So it's a single mafia. And even countries that are, like, not under the total control of the globalists, they still have a strong element in that country. They're able to run this worldwide. So,
And Trump's one of the only things standing up to
this. This was a worldwide, this was intended to be a worldwide flu d'etat. The same one world government
there we go.
Trick. of global warming hoax. That's exactly what this is, only we don't have to wait 15, 20 years for the end of the world. It's the end of the world is now. You see what I'm saying?
Right now, yeah.
Same
game.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. I mean, watch the news, and you can see they were always complaining about anti-Semitism and the anti-Semitism task force and the anti-Semitism czar. All of a sudden, it's the coronavirus tax force and the coronavirus.
You just brought up a really good point. Also, have you guys noticed? Has everybody noticed on the Electric Jew right now on the TV? There's no political ads, and there should be political ads slamming us right now because this is election year. There's really not any.
Now they want
because COVID-19 has taken over everything.
Yeah. Well, they're going to try and run it into November. I don't think they're going to be successful. But I really that's what they want to do is they want to have it so much mail in. And then in the states where the cities and counties where Democrats control, even if it's a Republican state, they can do enough fraud to flip an election. So,
well, thank God for the Electoral College, which is the only thing that saved our asses in the last election. So I don't know how that's, you know, because otherwise L.A. would you know rule the world. It would be able to. Yeah, L.A. they make the decision for everybody. When you have all these,
L.A., New York, and Chicago. L.A., New York, and Chicago. Yeah. All
right. So.
Well, gentlemen, let me wrap up here. It's 11:00.
Yeah. Wow, this has been a great honor.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure. And again, check out realhistorychannel.org and sign up for the free report there.
Free report on realhistorychannel.org. And this is author, historian M.S. King here on Falling Dominoes. It's just been an incredible honor having him here. And I learned so much, my head is bursting right now. So, maybe some other time, Mike. We'll have
thanks
you on again
for
that, I hope.
All right.
That's great. Thank you, Mr.
Thank
King.
You.
Appreciate it. Okay.
You're the best. Thank you. Everybody, I'm going to be sitting on there, and then we had a Tony call in. This is really, that was great. That went really good. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
What a brain.
You know,
what a brain on that guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he has that marketing background. So he was talking, advice he was giving us there about when you asked him, tactics for how to reach people. I really liked that he used that standard that tactic, the sales, I don't call it a tactic, but it's a technique. It's a sales technique where you ask people two questions that they can't say no to before you ask the third question, which is the one that if you didn't ask them the two, because they want to be consistent. People want to be consistent. If you go, if you ask them a question, well, do you like chocolate? Well, yeah. Oh, okay. Well, do you like hamburgers? Well, yeah, of course. Right. Oh, okay. So then,
the questions were like, have you heard of the Manhattan Project? Have you heard? I've also heard that for the love of money is the root of all evil. And all they said, yeah. And then, so we asked a couple questions first, and then get into that. Yeah, that's brilliant. I mean, it's great. I want to learn how to respond to these things. You know,
it's really, really, it's really good. Now, when Mike, when I first read, the first book I read by Mike was The Bad War. And I read that. And after I got that, I ordered every single book he had. And when he came out with new ones, I ordered those. So I went to print at Rothschild Volume 1 and 2. So when I was walking to work, I would be reading the books, walking through, Riff Raff and Lim City and everything and all these.
People
in very liberal areas, and I'm kind of like trying to troll people as I'm reading this book, seeing if people will see it and
ask you about it.
I'm just kind of like that. But yeah, I read every single one of them. The book on the Roosevelt, book on the bank,
Churchill?
the bank. Yeah, you got Churchill. Yeah, we discussed that. Mm-hmm. So
did you read the Putin one?
Yeah, I read that. And I got a few more to give people too. So I ordered a few.
Yeah, hey, I'll take any of them that you got. I'm going to order a few.
Yeah, I have extras to give people, and so I'll do that once in a while. And
awesome.
Hopefully, you know. Hopefully, it's that was great.
And then we had Tony call in. Tony, are you still there?
Yes, sir. I'm here.
I'm hung up. Oh, hey, great.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't have jumped in like that. I was under the impression you had to guest for 2 hours. I apologize if I, you know.
We covered a lot. That's fine. It was really good. I do, Tony. I have something I want to talk to you about the nuclear weapons thing. But first, right now, I want to tell you what we got coming on Falling Dominoes for the next 3 weeks. Next week, we have Monica Schaefer. Bless her heart. Her brother is in prison right now.
Is that the Kim Trails or
denial? What?
Oh. No, I'm sorry. Who is she?
Her brother is in prison for Holocaust denial, basically. And
she herself was in jail, too, for 10 months.
Right, when she went there. When she went there, exactly. Because in Germany, if you deny the Holocaust in any country, they consider you a criminal. If you come into Germany, you're considered a criminal, and they can arrest you. Okay, that's one thing. Okay, so that's her. And then the week after that, we have Dr. Alan Sobrowski. Dr. Sobrowski is just a brilliant guy who has a lot to say about 9/11 and that it was a Mossad operation. And he's also Jewish, so that should be really cool. Or he's part Jewish, at least. We'll get to that with him.
Who's that? Reading what?
Dr. Alan Sobrowski.
Oh, yeah.
I can't wait to have him on.
And what's really he going to talk about?
Well, whatever he wants to, but he's an accomplished PhD, and he used to work for the military in, like, I think it was, like, intelligence and all that. So he's, like, got a deep, and he, like I said, he's a PhD guy. He's got some Jewish heritage, from what I understand. I would like to get it from him. Of course, none of that matters. I just think that it's very interesting, you know, that he would be speaking out against them.
Does he question the Holocaust?
I think so. I think he does question it. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to talk to him about that. He does. Okay, and then the week after that, here's a big one. June 8th, we have Dr. E. Michael Jones coming on.
And, oh, you got that confirmed?
I got him. I got him. I can't wait. That's going to be super cool.
When did you get that confirmed? Today?
Yeah, today. I was going to tell you. I wanted to surprise you. So, because now we're going to, so everybody on Falling Dominoes here, we're going to be moving the show to 8 o'clock. On Monday night, starting next week. And we're going to have Monica on for next week, and hopefully she'll stay on the full 2 hours. We have so much to cover with her, and we could even get into some music and things like that. She's a violin player. That's really cool. And then, like I said, the week after that, Dr. Alan Sobrowski, and the week after that, E. Michael Jones. So everybody stick with us next few weeks. We've got some great guests coming up.
Yeah, and I want to say something about Monica Schaefer, too. The first... The
next
podcast I watched was with Erica, you know, Erica, mm-hmm. She's our friend,
Erica Sherry.
She interviewed her for 2 hours and I learned that, you know, heard Monica's story. You know, Monica used to be, with the Green Party, and she learned that the Green Party was just this corrupt globalist, you know, annihilate all of the European people. All for doing that. Once you know,
right.
It got it. But
I can't wait to have her tell us all that. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that's obviously, cool. Her intention in getting in that was to be, you know, to love nature and do the right thing and
Party,
defend,
yeah.
You know, justice and everything. It's just so funny how those movements can get usurped by.
They all
really
are,
evil.
Aren't they?
They all.
You
are.
Know who?
Yeah, they all are.
Uh-huh. There isn't a movement that's not completely taken over by them.
Her story is really incredible, and I'm so excited to have her on this next week.
That's
yeah,
good.
I listened
yeah,
to that
really
podcast
cool.
again on Saturday. So
are you
going to
have some good questions for her?
Absolutely.
Yeah, me too. I'll come up with some. That would be really cool. Well, anyway, I'm glad the show's going really. We're getting some really interesting people on here already, and that's what it's all about. It's all about the guests. I don't really want to talk about myself. There ain't a whole lot to really bring up there. Yeah. Oh, Tony.
Yes, sir.
Tony, you there? Okay.
Yes.
Remember how you said, remember when Mr. King, he mentioned the Manhattan Project, and that was one of those questions that gets people diverted, you know, to where, you know, and you were talking about, you questioned the validity of nuclear weapons?
No, their capability.
No. Oh, capability. What's the
thing?
Explain that. There's a book I have called...
Nuclear energy does exist.
Oh, I know that. Nobody's arguing that it doesn't. We're talking about a chain reaction fission bomb, a chain reaction explosion bomb. That is what is up to the question here. And this book is called Death Object, and it's Exploding the Nuclear Weapons Hoax by Akio Nakatani. He's this Japanese physicist dude, and he goes over a lot of things, like trying to he gives up a good argument why there's no the chain reaction bomb doesn't exist. Yes, there's depleted uranium. Yes, there are things like that. Nuclear power is real. Nobody's denying that. But this chain reaction giant explosion that the atom splits and does this chain reaction thing, he's saying that's not real. And that that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were both firebombed at the end of the war, just like Dresden and Hamburg, Stuttgart, and all that. It was pretty much the same thing. And I've heard that before from like Japanese testimony before I even got this book, that, you know, they thought they were being firebombed and then found out later that or whatever, that it was a nuclear explosion. So something like this is, I could definitely see, you know, keeping the world hostage and, you know, but then again, Israel is supposed to have the Samson option, right?
Right.
So I don't know that these, I'm not saying that nuclear weapons are a hoax. I don't think they are. I think that their capabilities are a hoax. That's what I think.
Right, that's what
I'm pretty
saying.
Sure that. And I agree with you.
And
especially after reading this book.
And I do get into the sciences and all that, but I won't even delve into that.
We're not
theories and all this.
Yeah, I don't know anything about
and that type of
anyway.
Thing. But just looking at the physical evidence on the ground, like you said, It seems to me that the only thing that's ever produced is mass heat. There's no crater. There should be a crater, right? This percussion that they claim, it just doesn't seem to be there. All the stone structures was just
standing. That's not adding up.
And the bridges even, and everything. And keep in mind, the houses that the
Japanese... And how come Hiroshima and Nagasaki... Yeah, how come they weren't inhabitable for 1,000 years or whatever? If there's supposed to be this nuclear winter and this nuclear fallout from bombs.
Well, granted, hydrogen's not... They're going to say it's because it's hydrogen and not plutonium and uranium, okay?
Oh, yeah.
I'll grant that, but
I will too.
But nonetheless,
I don't see
no evidence of anything more than heat.
I agree.
I don't think they have the capability. I looked into this, right, I said, well, it can't be a hoax, right, because we get electricity from nuclear power plants and everything, right? So I started to research
that
into that.
That a hoax.
And what I found
but
is the way they generate the electricity is that through the nuclear activity, whatever this is, okay, they heat water, which produces steam, which turns a turbine
to generate
electricity.
It's just boiling water.
It produces heat. It produces heat, right? But think about it. Now, your car doesn't work that way. Your car is just the opposite. Your car is using the percussion of the explosion that takes place that's pushing the pistons up and down. And the heat is the byproduct that you're trying to get rid of.
Definitely.
Right? Whereas
trying to dissipate
the power plants, it's just the opposite, which doesn't make sense. If it had such great explosive percussion type energy,
right,
it would only make more sense to harness that.
I agree.
Right, to generate electricity than the heat.
I think that the capabilities are grossly exaggerated, that there is no chain reaction nuclear bomb. I don't believe it.
So, Tony, let me ask you about this book a little bit. So I want to order it. Does it explain, you know, the science kind of in layman's terms, even if maybe you don't have
I'm talking about
chemistry background? What?
Are you talking about the book I'm talking about? No.
Yeah.
Death Object? Yeah, I've got it right here. It's by, I could send it to you if you want it. I'll send it to you.
Okay, wait. So I got confused because Tony raised the subject about the issue, and then you came in and talked about the book.
Yeah, I came in.
So
I wanted to talk to him about it because he brought it up.
Sir,
and
Tony,
it's something I've been looking into.
Book?
Oh, I don't
know. No, I never read that book. I just researched it. I think I heard a podcast where it came into question. Like, a lot of this stuff, you don't question it until someone says something. There's so much that you've taken for granted that you've been taught in school.
Right.
And just keep this in mind on all the sciences, okay, is that it's always presented to you as if it's unanimous, as if there's no dissent. And
there's
always
no such thing in science. Right.
And we see where that leads.
Science is just a method of investigation. It is not a belief system. It's not a cult. It's not meant to be. It's not meant to be a religion. It's only a method of investigation. And, of course, not everybody's going to agree on stuff. And same with doctors and same with MDs and physicians and any kind of science. They're not all going to agree.
Like the
cult
of Holocaustianity or the cult of global warming, climate change. Yep. There's a cult.
Exactly. They're cults. They're cults, buddy.
Yeah.
That's exactly what they are. They're just crazy, crazed cults, especially the Holocaustianity one. They're so passionate about this Holocaust of this.
Fanatical people.
Oh my God! It's just
they're really, really deranged.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about even just the normies who get taken over by it. Like if I tried to talk to my sister, my normie sister, about this and brought up that the Holocaust was fake, I guarantee you that it would not go over well.
No, of course not. Me too.
No. Right. Okay. And she's not Jewish. She's my sister. There's nothing to, you know, it's the people that defend it more than anything. The Jews don't even have to. They don't even need to. It's the idiot goys that perpetuate the myth. And yeah, exactly.
Well, did you gentlemen believe it at one time?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
I believed it my whole
life
until I started researching it.
Me too.
Until I started looking into it.
Mm-hmm. So 2.5 years ago.
So, I mean, what was it? It was really traumatic for me. It was traumatic for me when I found out.
Oh yeah.
And I would see stuff here and there as I do searches on the internet with maybe related topics. And I think I was crazy. I wouldn't think nothing about it. And then you start thinking about the details, numbers. Like, yeah, but why can't you question a historical event? And for me, I think it was one time I was looking at these emaciated bodies, and something just clicked in my brain and said, wait a minute, it just doesn't make sense to starve these people to death when you're just trying to get rid of them, you know? And then you realize it doesn't make sense to just put them on trains and transport them all over the damn place just to gas them.
Well, there's so
many
things
that don't
make sense
about it. and then it just goes down.
But come to find out
that
those trains, those cattle cars were actually Bolshevik cattle cars cattling Christians off to Gulag.
Oh, wow. It's quite possible.
I don't really know. I mean, I can't say that they didn't have cattle cars in NADAP Germany.
Well, there were the ghettos. There was a couple ghettos and stuff where they forced them all within that area. And there was an expulsion. It was number 109, right? They were trying to get them out of there. You know, we talked before on this show about expulsions don't work.
Yeah,
expulsions don't work. We talked about this.
It's just to get people to think, wait a minute, you know, even by the official numbers and records and everything, man, the Soviets killed way more people than the gulags. I mean, even by the official numbers. And I try I'd use that as an angle to get in the door with people. And then I'll just say, look, you know, and because you're going to get this knee-jerk anti-Semite, this and that. And you just got to point out, like, hey, man, the narrative is when you think of World War II, all you think about is Jewish suffering with this 6 million figure, even though hundreds of Christians. How many Christians, were murdered? I mean, they slaughtered Nicholas II, the Tsar of they butchered him
boy.
And his family.
Sure did.
And when they talk about how the Soviets, it's like this. Well, you guys got into this a little bit earlier too about like. The division among the Jews versus the globalist communists versus Zionists, man. They're all, and there is no monolith people, right? They're not monolith. But at the end of the day, whether it's a left Jew or a right Jew, all he's concerned about is his people, right? He's not concerned about even the very nation that he's in. And they may claim that they don't and never have. And that's one thing that the Fuhrer has said, right? That there's a people that are at home nowhere, yet they're at home everywhere.
So they've become very adept at being international and at subverting nations. very, very skillful and adept, and just get better and better and better at it.
The most organized people in the world, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
They're incredibly organized. You know, and we're
and unified. That's right. I mean,
right.
To try to divide and conquer them, that's probably be one of the hardest people because they're very naturalistic. Another thing I point out to people about naturalism and this and that, I said, look, the most nationalist nation on this earth, with the exception of maybe North Korea, is Israel.
Israel. Oh, yeah. They're actually almost
the
national socialist
that they say.
They're almost a national socialist society. Almost. Like close. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, they need a separate standard for themselves and other people. And that's easy when you've been ingrained. One, you've all your life you've been ingrained as the chosen people of God. And that is by birth. And it is. It's the religion in itself. Is this? They are the most supremacist people on the nation while they run around. And the problem with our people and white Western civilization, okay, is this, I don't know, this guilt or whatever that they project their crimes on us. And then we turn around and just keep playing defense. And that's the reason why why Republicans, conservatives, what we would say, they never do anything. All they do is toe the line. This is my problem with Trump and every conservative before him. They never gained territory. They never gained. And slowly but surely, the left always gains. And I've watched this in the course of my life. And the Overton window switches to the left. And then you're just happy that I mean, yeah, I can agree with all the pro-Trump stuff on the lesser of the evils. But he is the most pro-Zionist president we've ever had. And he's nothing.
By appearances. Only by appearances, though. Not in reality.
No, he
is. He's not doing anything.
No, he is. I mean, his children are in. I don't know about
that. We already covered that with Mike. Mike already covered that children thing. It's just a deception. It's a marriage of political convenience. That's all it is. It's his shield. It's brilliant, actually.
Well,
it's absolutely necessary.
Mike Pence is a true believer. He's a true believer. Mike Pence. I mean, the Zionists would probably like to have him over Trump. Mike Pence, he's a true believer. Now, how much of a true believer? I'm sorry?
Yeah, the vice president. I don't know how much of a true believer he is.
Yeah, no, he's very devout pro-Zionist, all the way. I mean, they go to that AIPAC, which is in D.C. It's AIPAC, right?
Yeah.
America,
Israel,
American
Alliance.
Israeli Public Affairs Committee.
There it is. Thank
and he's a big speaker.
Used to be called the National Zionist Council. It was. And it was called
the
American
Senate,
Zionist
you know,
Council at one time.
Yeah.
It should be called the Real White Supremacy Problem.
Right.
And let me say this.
Really, Zionism doesn't even exist anymore. The idea was that it was supposed to be a place they would get their own homeland if they behaved, and of course they're not doing that. And then, as far as that goes, I mean, it's not about one little piece of real estate or even the Greater Israel Project. They want the whole freaking world. They want the entire world.
Right.
They don't care about one little piece of land.
Yeah, you know, the Pale, remember how they were given the Pale of Settlement by the Czars? And that was this massive landmass. This is back in the 1800s. Massive landmass that stretched from Georgia, southern Baku, Georgia, that area, Azerbaijan, I think, Crimea, all that area, all the way up through Ukraine, all the way into Poland, and all the way up through Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. Massive. And it was like, no, that's not good enough for us. We need to have a host to parasite from. I'm sorry, but that's just what it is. That's just the truth.
Well, it is a parasite.
They need to host the parasite.
Israel is the central base. It's their central
hub. All over the world, every country except those that were bombing, like Syria and Iran.
Right.
They got Gaddafi. He had made such a great country for his people. I mean,
taking care of his people. Gaddafi was another great man.
And just imagine how satanic that is. You have to take him out.
I could keep asking Mike question after question about these guys. I would love to hear what he says about, but then I get that after an hour
on the air. That's already a lot. Yeah, so to get an hour out of somebody as awesome as him, that was huge honor, actually.
So let me drop another one real quick, and this is sort of off topic, but going back to the thing about white and white supremacy. So, you know, the term white, you know, you go on the brochure and we fill out the thing so we can do, you know, the government form, and it asks us what the ethnicity is. And our choices are, everybody else has different choices. There's some, you know, they're not as generalized, right? We get to us and it's like white. That's like,
those are imaginary things, white and black. They're not the
Now it has a negative connotation because it's just got so much bad press around the word.
To be exact about your origins, that's the best way to beat it.
The word does us no justice. It's not like Anglo or German or Russian or French or whatever, or Italian, whatever else that now constitutes white. So I think we need to press for, you know, no.
That's why you got to talk about, like you just said, you have to be exact about your origins.
Yeah, race and
I'm Italian and Irish. I'm not white. I'm Italian and Irish. Irish,
If you need to make them a
European
category, then fine. Just expand that freaking, you know, that application. Just make it a half a page longer so you can get that on there. I'm sick of it.
They don't want that. They don't want us to be exact about our origins. That's the last thing they want, is for us to be exact about our origins. They hate that when we are.
I don't want to have a pan-European unity between all of us. That's not what that means.
Oh, yeah. I'm for solidarity between all races. Every one of them. You know?
Yeah.
We need it for everybody.
Well, and then that's why it's so nice to understand that, like, Islam is being used as a proxy warrior in Europe,
sure is.
Right? So we go and we bomb all those countries and turn them, you know, into annihilate them, and then they have no.
You know, that radical Islam, you know it as well as I do. It's not Islamic at all. It's not Islamic. It's Judaism, all the way.
Right. Right. And so then that's when the Bolshevik faction steps in. So the Zionist faction just goes and bombs the hell out of everybody, and then the Bolshevik faction comes in and NGOs them up into, using Soros money or whatever, NGOs them up into Europe or into Australia or over to New Zealand or into America. But Europe really gets it because Europe is there, right there. You know, it's, you can walk, they can hike there from, I mean, it's a long hike, but enough from the Middle East, you're connected by land. Or you can go across in a boat, the Mediterranean, from North Africa, which Gaddafi in Libya was the cork of Africa. So now that they pop the cork off...
It was the entrance way there.
Yeah.
No.
So, you know, these are countries that we would all otherwise love and appreciate the people because, you know, everybody is geographically located and there is real diversity in the world. And we really want that to happen, right? And they've turned everything into mud.
I want to read something. It's on topic. Okay, here we go. First one. White, black, brown, red, and yellow. Pardon me. These are not good descriptions of who we are. We can avoid the whole race issue /trap by just being exact about our origins. They will hate that. They want us totally bereft of any deep connections with our past and our culture. No matter where you come from, you have been handed a false narrative. You've been made to believe that you are a victim and that you've been lied to about who your oppressor actually is. Most people are against fascism without knowing what it is. In the New World Order, fascism is just a Marxist canard. It just means having domestic policies that are in the public interest. Big surprise, they hate it.
Yeah, right. That's correct.
Yeah, it's a nice little short, concise.
That are actually in the public interest. Yeah. It's funny.
It's having domestic policies that benefit people here in that nation. And, you know, that's what fascism was really supposed to be about. It was really taking care of its people first.
Yeah.
The word fascia means bound together. That's what it is. And it was connective tissue. In medical terms, it's connective tissue that holds things together. And in other ways, it's a bundle. It's something that's held together. That's a fascia. That's where the root of the word is. You know, it's not what we are told in our history books, just like everything else right now, I'm finding out.
I know. Now I've questioned everything. So I even questioned the nuclear thing. I'll even look into that.
Yeah,
but,
me too.
Hey, Tony, are you
everything.
Still there?
Yeah.
Tony, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about, like, your journey and how you got red-pilled on this, because you said that it was a very traumatizing experience for you.
Yeah, when you found out the Holocaust was fake.
Just, can you... Like, let's go back to where before when, like, I don't know if you were, not necessarily, if you were like, were you like an NPC? Yeah, I don't know. before, but it'd be interesting just to watch the to hear about your transformation and sort of.
Oh,
how
yeah,
you
what is exactly does NPC stand for again?
What's an NPC?
And when, how long has it been?
I gotta answer the question, though, Willie.
What's an NPC?
Oh, it's a canard.
Right.
It's called stands for non-playable character. It kind of, you know,
there it is, non-playable character.
It emerged a couple years ago, I think.
Non-player
and,
character.
You know,
any character in a game which is not controlled by a player. The team originated.
I think it
from traditional rule tap.
Yeah, I think.
No,
it,
I mean,
I think
I'm
it
more,
evolved
I came from a conservative background of as far
4chan
as like conspiracies or major lies. You know, I started to. I can't remember what the first one was. Maybe 9/11. Someone made me question that.
Yeah.
And I looked into that, and I was like, "Holy shit!" And I don't want to get onto that. And I don't know. I uncovered a bunch of different things. But yeah, that was the first thing that when I started digging into that, and I saw the fallacy of it, that I was like, "Man, this is the first time I've uncovered something that I'm afraid to talk about." And that's not me or my personality, because I realized immediately, like, "Holy shit, man." It can be serious, and that's what they try to do is ruin your life, make you lose your job, destroy you financially. And the fact that, and just by the way, the fact that Google, I mean, this is another problem I got with Trump. The only reason he's on, and I'm not even on any of these, what is it Twitter or whatever, and can do all these tweets, is because he's the president, right? But they'll ban people that retweet his tweets.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and the way that the bias that's so clear that's taking place,
he's going after them now.
Platforms, and the fact that they can't, like you, like they force you to bake a cake for some gay, a marriage or something, like this religious person when there's so many places they can get a damn cake, right? But Visa and all them can refuse processing, you know. And I don't know anything enough about these. You know, the cryptocurrencies and everything to even get into that. But you know, look, and if they get total victory on this, then you can in the internet, we're done.
Oh,
it's
great.
Over. So I don't even give a shit.
Yeah,
what, sounds I mean,
like
I could
even be able to be on.
I could even put up with all the Israel shit or whatever, but the fact that that's not even coming to the forefront, you know, and then the realization and, you know, what they can get away with if people don't unite. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this. I don't know, though. The more people, the COVID thing, because the more people are shut in, the more they're, I imagine, on social media. I never use that stuff, tweet. I don't know how to do it.
Right.
I probably should have got on one of them just in case people from my earlier life were trying to contact me, but.
Right on.
But, yeah, I never did. What's that, sir?
How'd you find out about the show?
Oh, the media. Well, I knew Richard. excuse me. I knew him from a previous network and really liked his work. Right. And they had a falling out because a lot of people at that network have a falling out. They don't keep hosts. And I didn't know. I forget. I think I found out from an interview he did with someone else. And anyway, so, yeah, I was really pleased to find him again.
Yeah,
and then he told me it was
the
later show.
Part of the station, Revision Media. Because we are able to pretty much cover everything, anything that we want. And you know, we're not calling for any kind of violence or anything against anybody ever. We definitely don't stand for that. That's not where we're trying. You know, trying to get an open exchange of ideas, really. You know, that's about it. And, yeah, the Jewish problem is a big problem. You know, how do you deal with it? And that's a lot of it right there. How do you talk to people about it? That's been a big topic of ours. How do you not sound like a raving lunatic, you know, to them? You know,
you got to compartmentalize them. But then sometimes you're just putting seeds, right? You know, you say, The more people are willing to speak out, then they'll pick it up. But without the internet,
right. We're done. Without the
internet. Think about it like this. You know, right. In the future, at some point, everybody is going to know. And are you going to be the person that was the sheep that sat in the corner and didn't say anything? Right. Or are you going to be one of the pioneers that made it happen? And it isn't about you being this big ego person. It's just, you know, what difference did you make? But
well, there you go. I mean, that's what we're actually trying to make a difference. That's a good point. The more people that wake up to this and then you say, okay, well, what do you do if everybody does wake up? The majority of the people do know about the problem. What do you do about it then? We still have to talk about solutions. And the only solution I know of that's ever worked is the Byzantine solution. We've talked about that before. You know, where they just legally they have to be excluded from, can't throw them out. Pogroms and expulsions don't work. It always plays into their hands, always. You know, every one of them have. And they just use it as they're able to, you know, be the eternal victims and all that. They just have to be excluded from positions of power by law if necessary. But that's really the only solution, is keep them out of the banking, keep them out of media, keep them out of medicine, keep them out of law, all these things, education, all those really, really important core things that they've completely taken over.
That's why studying the religion itself and the Talmud, and then once you make that public, then everybody can digest the fact
that's what
that
has been going public. The problem is that people think there's some kind of compatibility with Christianity. There's none. They think there's some kind of compatibility with it. There's zero. Even somebody like the brilliant Dr. Jones, I believe he argues, and I can't wait to ask him about this, that the Torah is compatible with Christianity. And I'm not sure what he feels about the Old Testament. I know that the Old Testament is just it's just the basis for the Torah and the Talmud and all that. It's a practical expression.
No. The Torah is the basis of the Old Testament. The Torah is the first five books of the Old Testament.
Oh, well, that's right. It's the first five
Genesis,
books. Exactly.
Exodus, Leviticus,
exactly.
Numbers,
that's all. It's the first five books. It's their book.
Right.
Yeah, Deuteronomy is horrible. If you read it, oh, my God. Save alive, nothing that breathes. Everywhere you go, you know, you're the, you know, you're king. It's basically gives them their chosen doctrine right out of those first five books.
So, yeah. And
OT
read,
is not
like,
compatible with Christianity. Zero.
Correct. Greg, if you read Deuteronomy, some of the books in there, like 7 and 20, you'll see the racist supremacism in there.
Oh, yeah.
Also.
Absolutely. It's the worst one.
No, it's terrible. You can go around and slaughter everybody.
Deuteronomy is the worst one.
It's okay. You have a right to do that. You know, God's chosen people or whatever. So that covenant was revoked in the New Testament. It was revoked in Hebrews 8, which is in the New Testament. That's where it's written down. When Christ came and provided them with salvation, this is wrong. We don't behave this way anymore towards humanity. And so it's just funny how when it's like, okay, stop being racist, you get called a racist. That's really what's happening. That's what Jesus did. He said, stop being a racist. Stop being a supremacist, and then
he spent his entire
racism, is suddenly a racist supremacist. It makes no sense at all. And that's the Star of David, the two triangles flipping over, as above, so below, and the 666 that comes out of the star. Right, exactly.
It can all be traced to the Old Testament, all that stuff.
The six sides of the triangle and the six points of the triangle. 666.
Yep. That's right.
Well, Jesus did say, though, that salvation is of the Jews.
Yeah, well, that word didn't even exist in biblical time. So that was all written in there afterwards. I mean, that word didn't even exist.
Where did it just meant that tribe? It's in the Gospels. I don't have a concordance in front of me. It's the Syrophoenician woman that comes to her. She had an ailing child or something. I'm real rusty with this. And he said it's not fit to give that which belongs to the children to the dogs. And she said, "Yes, my lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the table." And she, he said, "Go my way, you know, this thing." It's not, if you have a strong concordance, and I'm sure with computers, you could do that. And it was through Paul, basically, in the known Roman world, that it was spread to the Gentiles.
The one thing that really needs to get driven home to normies about this whole problem, about the Jewish problem, the one thing that could really change things is that they have to realize there's not one good word spoken about non-Jews anywhere in the entire religion. They have nothing. Everyone needs to realize that fact, that there isn't one good word about non-Jews. The entire religion, they don't have anything good to say about any non-Jews.
Yeah, the Talmud. Right. I would agree with you. The Talmud, as far as I know,
any other book,
the Old,
and any other writing.
No, the Old
ever.
Testament. The Old Testament can be confusing because there are times where it's 1 minute it'll be talking about the Gentiles, coming and licking the dust off of their feet. That's in Isaiah, you know, and just bowing and prostrating before them. And then other times it's like they're treated, you know. Yeah, like it's this wonderful coming together. Kind of interesting, right? A little bit of Zionism, a little bit of communism.
It's pretty nasty.
So, Tony, you know there's different versions of the Bible, right?
They're supposed
to
be the light to the...
There's like the New International, the Scofield Bible, which the Scofield Bible is the Zionist version of the Bible.
That's what's rewritten. Sure.
But I guess the King James is the one that's generally the accepted, like, most honest.
I wonder how many times it's all about. You've got to be careful with that book.
That, it's based on Erasmus. I can't remember what century. Was it the 15th century? I'm not sure. But it's based on Erasmus. And then later you have the majority text, which is from which your New King James comes from. And then with the New International Version, which is where a lot of revision took place, right? There were like revised versions before that, even called the Revised Version, American Revised. The English did it, and then there was the American Revised, and where they started incorporating some of the Alexandrian text. I just know because I studied this, and that's because these were known for greater antiquity. But then the argument was that, were antique and they were preserved because they were lesser copies that weren't in use. And so the people that use the majority text argument, and this is actually a good argument, but I got to preface this by saying I'm not a believer. I used to be. Okay, but is that because the Bible spread so far and wide in so many places that these errors, and it's full of errors in the copying. No, we don't have the original autographs.
Well, what book is it? I mean,
that you
should change it.
I'm sorry, what was the question?
I don't know. Yeah, the Bible.
No, most of them, to be fair, because I studied this, most of them are like the word chi, which means the, and like little like prepositions and these type of things that don't render much to the text, but there are like whole pieces missing from text. That's why you'll see that note at the end of Mark's gospel, and that one probably wasn't supported by the majority, but I'm not sure about drinking poison and all that. But I mean, it is in the Bible about drinking poison and getting bitten by venomous snakes and the Apostle Paul is giving
the Bible and change it however, because it's not written in a clear language for anyone to understand. You're able to have any translation you want, and it's a dangerous book in the wrong hands. There's no question about it. You know, I've got a bunch of quotes right here from Deuteronomy, Exodus, Isaiah, Joshua, Deuteronomy again. It's just nasty. The Old Testament. Yeah, but anyway, I mean, it's been a great show tonight, you guys. I am gonna have to get off early. I got a couple things I got to do. So, really, there was only like 10 minutes left anyway. You guys can keep going if you want. But
I'm fine.
Yeah. So here, Tony, thank you very much for calling in. Next week is gonna be Monica Schaefer. I'm extremely excited about that. You know, right, Will? That's going to be really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stoked about that.
And, you know, you're welcome to call in anytime, Tony, and, you know, get in and ask questions and jump in the conversation.
What part of Virginia are you in, Tony? Are you in, like, north, south, middle?
Yeah, I'm in Northern Virginia. I'm the D.C., Washington, D.C. metropolitan area.
Wow.
Yeah. How do you like it there? That's like there's no sanctuary, 2A sanctuary there, right?
Yeah, the gun control thing is going on there pretty bad right now.
Yeah, we did. Virginia's right. Was the good side. Yeah, yeah, we actually we managed to hold the line on a lot of things. Good. And so they just want to see where I think the elections go because they got it, but they know people won't sit down next time. So trying to hold their seats and getting a lot of this through. But, I mean, that's the way it's going. And as much as that concerns me, this freedom of speech thing is where we're done. Then if you can't get the information out, it's bad enough.
Yeah.
And so many people don't even want to listen or care. They care about Jersey Shore, this and that. I mean, that's why democracy doesn't work.
Never.
You know,
democracy.
Yeah.
Democracy is slow-boiled communism.
Oh, man.
It is.
Yeah,
it's capitalism.
It's mob rule. And like the Fuhrer said,
and when
know,
the mob is,
not worth
is,
one
is
life
unintelligent, when the mob is as bad as it is now, so, you know, look at the leftists. They're just crazed. They're mentally ill. Like, the whole thing is mentally ill. It's a giant, big mental illness, you know, and
I agree with you. I encountered these people have no argument, no reasoning. They just hate Trump.
Right.
It is crazy. I've heard of that Trump derangement. I don't know
I know a lot of people have
it. Can someone explain?
It just
propaganda
just
that good
to them? And, you know, I don't know. That's part of the reason I like him so much, actually.
is that people react like that to it.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons I like him.
It's this great quality.
Yeah, it is a good quality.
You know what? When
it just shows that it's
I went
like,
to
wow,
bed
okay,
that
so.
Night. I went to bed that night thinking Hillary was going to win. I couldn't believe it.
I
had to watch the replay of all the tears and to see these people.
I still put that on to put myself in a good mood. I'll play that one, that video, the mishmash of all the liberals freaking out. Or first of all, them saying he'll never be president, and then when he gets the election, them just melting down. It's beautiful. It really is.
Yeah.
Pretty neat.
It's going to be really interesting.
Well, anyway, you guys, I got to hit it. And I loved having the show. It was a great show. Thank you to MS King for coming here and just, you know, really, like, blowing our brains up. It was pretty neat.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Tony,
I'm Greg McGill. We got Willie Red Pill.
Yeah, I'm
Yeah, Willie Redfield, and then Tony from Virginia calling tonight.
And then Richard Carey, and you can add me to William Repellum. Tony.
There you go.
Yeah. It's good. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot, you guys. We will be talking next week.
Yep, you bet.
All right, everybody have a great night. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Have fun, Domino's. Thank you.